This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
My least favorite thing to perform at is a charity event where the person who booked me is a fan, but no one else is. Booked, it happens all the time. Though there's so many jokes though that have fallen by the wayside because I haven't written them down, and I just maybe go take a week off and don't do stand up, and then the next time I do it, I forget that little line,
right?
And it's gone, and I don't listen to myself. Like, there's many things I could be doing that.
Oh, you don't listen to your own shows?
No.
Wow.
Because I don't like myself. I don't want to hear that.
Welcome back to the show, guys. Got with me the first comedian ever to come on the show and one of the best to do it.
Oh my God, thank
Nikki
you.
Glazier, yeah.
I'm so honored.
Yeah, I've never had a comedian, but I'm pumped because I've watched some of your stuff.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, and you're starting your tour?
Yeah, I'm always on tour, but this is the tour that's leading up to a special taping coming up. But it's like the best material I've ever done. I've been doing this for 20 years, so I just feel at this, like, I guess that expert level where you've done that, you're 10,000 hours. I just feel like I'm finally saying the things that I'm reaching that level that I always like admired other comedians to have reached, where it's like, man, they can just kind of say the truth of their situation and make it funny. And you're not trying to be funny. You're more just trying to say what you find funny. I think when you first start out in comedy, you're just thinking, what will people like me for? Like, what can I do to get people to like me? And you're fighting the things that are you. You're like, God, why can't I be more like him or more like her? She's so good. He's so good.
Yeah.
And I think now I still don't like myself because to be a comedian, you have to have deeply low self-esteem. So I still have that. I have that going for me or against me. But I do know, I lean in more to the things that are uniquely me. The things that I used to think, God, I wish I was like someone else.
So you're not holding back.
No, I'm not holding back. And certainly when someone says I can't say something, I kind of figure out a way to do it. I don't really ever want to offend anyone or hurt anyone's feelings or trigger anyone. And I don't say that like, and trigger anyone, because I do think that people can hear a certain word or it can cause them some trauma response based on their experience. And everyone's entitled to get offended or triggered. And I will apologize if someone like writes me after a show and is like, I had to leave because you were talking about molestation. I'll be like, here's your money back. I don't want to ruin your night, but I'm not going to not talk about that stuff because a couple people might have had an experience with it. I think more so I have people coming up to me saying, I was thank you for talking about that so frankly, because I just like to talk about things that people might have shame about. And those things might be triggering also.
I think you're just presenting the topic and then it's their choice how they interpret it, right?
Well, so, I think you're right. Like, I think just the word, if I say the word like in a joke, and it could be not, obviously not about the victim of it, or it's just mentioning that it exists in the world, that word alone could have someone go into a panic attack state, just hearing about something that happened to them and hearing that word. And that must suck to like go throughout your life worried that this word might come up and send your body into a trauma response that you can't help. That would suck. So I never like to have anyone feel that way at shows, but of course it's probably happened. And I've probably upset people by saying certain words that trigger them. But I just think it's, that doesn't mean I shouldn't talk about, because guess what? It's happening a lot. And although it's never happened to me, and that's probably one of the reasons I can talk about it and not have a problem talking about it, it's something that I still fear, and it still could happen to me. I'm not giving up yet. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm still very capable, and you can't take that from me.
Got it. Man, you've been doing this for 20 years?
Yeah.
I feel like not a lot of comedians last that long, right?
No. I mean, you mean they themselves?
No,
before?
Not that. just,
they drop out.
Yeah, they give up because it's a tough space.
It is. You know, I don't know if I would have, I'd still be doing it or trying if I was at a level that I'm not, that I'm at now. You know, if I think there is a point that I probably would have been like, well, this isn't, people don't like this, clearly. and I would have maybe read the room and gotten out of the game. But because I've been successful, it's been easy to stay in it.
Yeah.
But it's a great job. You know, if you can make money at this, and I mean, it's awesome. You get to meet the most interesting people. You get to be famous by being yourself.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have to prepare anything to come in here. You know, I didn't have to research anything. I don't have to be smart. I don't have to be like a scientist. I mean, I have to have jokes for my act, but really that is just an extension of just being myself. I don't have to learn lines.
Yeah.
I don't have to act. I don't have to go train I don't have to work out. You know, there's a part of my job that's staying presentable because I'm on TV and looking nice, but generally being a comedian is a great job, although we are more, you know, we're prone to depression and dentists and veterinarians.
Oh yeah. I did hear that actually. I think a lot of comedians drink and
yeah, I think because I think that being a comedian is a desperate attempt to get everyone to like you. I mean, wanting fame. Comedians might say that they're not after fame, but they're after making a room of strangers laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And what is laughter but validation that, like, I like you. Like like everyone wants that feeling of like someone laughing at something you said. It's
a good feeling.
Oh my God, it's right now I just got a shot of dopamine just hearing my own laugh thinking about receiving that, because it feels so good. It's like a drug and it makes you feel wanted and loved. So yeah. I think a lot of comedians come from damaged homes or homes where they didn't feel loved. My parents loved me a lot, but just not enough. Like right. They always get mad when I talk about this because they're like, we loved you. They're the greatest parents ever. My sister is a teacher. She has kids. Like, we're not f***ed up.
Yeah.
I'm a little f***ed up. But it's because I just needed more. It wasn't enough. Most people would have been very satisfied with the amount of love my parents gave. But I was like, yeah. I need more.
I think you got to be a little f***ed up to be a comedian.
I think so.
If you're a normal comedian, I don't think you'd be funny.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. And you got to be a little depressed or look at the world in a negative way, because that's kind of what we're up there doing, is calling out things that are like, why is it this way? What's the deal with this? Just always kind of cynical and judging things.
Yeah.
You kind of got to be in a negative headspace. Although when I get really depressed, I don't think I'm very good at doing comedy. Because I'm prone to depression. And when I'm depressed, it's just, you're not even laughing about life. You're just sad about it. So I think that comedy is a way out of depression, to laugh about the things around you. But sometimes, yeah, it's hard.
So were you like from the start, or like did it take 5-10 years to kind of build up?
I told my parents when I first started that they needed to like emotionally and maybe financially support me for 7 years, I have said. And they were like, what are you talking about? Because that seems like a weird specific number. I just knew I wasn't good to start. I knew I had potential. You know, when you start in something and you're fresh, you have a knack for it. Like, I definitely got feedback being like, hey, stick with this. You have something.
Okay.
You have a natural affinity towards this. But are you going to be as good as a headliner that's been doing it for 10 years when you first start? Rarely. There's kind of like those phenoms you hear about, the Chappelles. I think Michael Che also started really. Matt Rife. No, Matt Rife's been doing it, man.
Oh, yes?
He's been doing it probably 8 years at this point.
Oh, he looks so young. I just
he
thought he
so
was just
young,
starting.
But I think he's got the years to there's just no way he'd be that good without the experience, because you just don't start out that way. He definitely probably started out and was decent for his level, but comedy's weird because let's talk about musicians or actors. You can start when you're a child. So you can get those 10,000 hours in, and by the time you're in your mid-20s, you're an expert. You're as good as you're ever gonna, you've been doing it forever.
Yeah.
But you can't start comedy when you're a kid.
Makes sense.
You can't get into clubs until you're 18. So that's when you start, and you need about 10 years until you're really good. So 28 is around the age where you start to see people pop, because it takes that long.
10 years, wow.
Yeah, so never expect anyone out of the gate to be great. And I always tell this to comedians starting out, don't compare yourself to people who've been doing it 10 years or longer, because that's what you compare yourself to.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot for that, aim for that, know that that's down the road from that you can reach that, but it's gonna take time and you're gonna suck for so long.
Yeah.
And I did. You know, I didn't suck, but compared to the people that were doing it as long as me, I was like, okay, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I tried to do, is just always compare at my level. Don't go to the, you know, because then I'll get depressed of like, how could I ever do an hour on stage? I can't even remember 3 minutes. Like, there was times where I remember thinking that. And now I can do an hour and a half without think about it.
It's a long time.
It's a long time.
And are you coming up there with a script, or are you just improvising?
It's not, it's definitely stuff I've said before, but I don't really write anything down. I don't know why my brain works this way, but I can just kind of remember jokes, almost like lyrics that I've heard forever.
So you're like Lil Wayne.
Yes.
You don't write down anything.
Does he not write down anything?
Nah.
It's insane. Yeah. That's crazy. Even though I do it in my own way, I write like, if it's a joke about shit, I'll just put like in my phone. So I like know the topic. There's so many jokes though that have fallen by the wayside because I haven't written them down, and I just maybe go take a week off and don't do stand up. And then the next time I do it, I forget that little line.
Right.
And it's gone. And I don't listen to myself. Like, there's many things I could be doing that.
Oh, you don't listen to your own shows?
No.
Wow.
Because I don't like myself. I don't want to hear that. You know, like, I don't know what it's like. I don't listen to my own podcast. I don't like, because it's already done. And I can't change it. And I guess I know the best football players watch tape. Like, you gotta watch tape, and I should do that. Mm-hmm. When I do, I tend to learn things, but it's torturous for me because I just don't.
I will agree with the podcast one. I'm a little self-conscious about listening to myself on podcasts.
Yeah, it's wild because we're doing this because we want people to consume what we do. And we have a belief in ourselves somewhere in there that this is worth listening to. Not for me, though. I don't want to.
Something about hearing your own voice, it's like, makes you cringe sometimes.
It's funny. I can watch myself on mute, and I'm not someone who's like vain. Like, I'm so hot. I struggle with my own, like, you know, body dysmorphia. But it's so much easier for me to watch myself on mute and just read my lips and go, oh, that joke was good, than to hear my own voice. But I think that's a relatable thing. I don't think we're meant to hear our own voice.
Yeah, we're not built for that, man.
I don't think in caveman days or whatever, you would at least see your reflection in the pond or like the water, so maybe that we're used to that and it doesn't bother us as much as you would probably not hear your voice a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it sounds so much different than in your own head when you speak.
So what's your creative process? Because I know stealing jokes is a big no-no in your space. So how do you get inspiration for creating your own content and jokes?
I would say it starts out, I started out being like, what do you even write about? People were telling me I should be a stand-up comedian. I'm like, where do you start? That's so weird. And the best thing I did for myself, and I tell this to younger comedians, is write for someone you really admire. Mm. For some reason, it's easier to do work for other people. Do you relate to that? Like, I'd like to clean someone else's room than my own. Or
interesting.
I'd like to do someone else's homework. Even in school, I would like to do my sister's homework, but not my own.
I think I'm too selfish for that. I don't think I do that.
Interesting. Okay.
But you're more helpful.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's been easier for me to do someone else's job than my own. Okay. And so I thought, okay, what would I write for if I had to write jokes for Sarah Silverman? You know, she was my idol when I first started out and remains still someone I really look up to. But I remember my first jokes were like, okay, I'll just write for her. Mm-hmm. Because usually the person you're admiring is kind of the closest to what your voice is anyway. Right. So you kind of get there. But now I just wait for moments where I'm in conversation with friends, or I'm, you know, blow drying my hair and so my mind's kind of wandering, or I'm in the shower or driving, you know, those moments where you're getting that flow. And you just think of it like, oh, something funny. And then you just hopefully write it down. Right. Because convincing yourself that you're going to remember it does not work. It will never work.
Yeah.
And so it's weird to be like mid-conversation and be talking and then the person's saying something back and you go, hold on one second. I just have to write down what I just said because I'm so clever. And I think thousands of people need to hear this. Like, it's kind of a cringe moment to do that. But you have to do that because there's nothing worse than having this moment where you're like, that's the greatest joke I've ever written. It's so good I'll remember it. And then you don't.
Been there.
So that's really what it's about, is just paying attention all the time and being ready for something to, you know, come in. And then you jot in your phone, and then I'm backstage at a show and I have my material that I've been doing forever or that I've been working on it's kind of just on the top of my head. And then I look through my phone at my new stuff and I'm like, okay, how can I work in some of these thoughts? And and hopefully I'll remember them when I'm on stage. I kind of review. And then they kind of just creep in.
Nice.
But it's really, it doesn't make any sense. There's much better ways to conduct the creative process for me that would make me much more successful. But
sounds
they
like
just,
your mind's just all over the place.
I'm just ADD, you know, and I think it's served me in a lot of ways. But I think that I know the best way to be a comedian is to come off stage and go, what worked, what didn't? Talk about it with someone, go over it right after you're done with the performance because it's fresh in your mind. But I don't want to focus on the stuff I just did. I want to go eat dinner and celebrate that I'm done and relax and kick off my shoes. And I could put in a lot more work off stage, but most of my work is just on stage.
Makes sense. Do you still get insanely nervous sometimes?
No. You know, I think the nerves went out the window a couple years in. When I get nervous is when, you know, I have my manager or an agent there or something, or I have, you know, there's like a celebrity in the room that I'm like, oh, I'd like to impress this person. Or there's just a guy I like, or I don't know, you know, just someone whose opinion of me I care about so much. But generally, or something's riding on it. Like, I'm not good at auditioning.
Right.
I don't audition for things anymore, because although I'm good when I get the role and I can really nail it because I have the confidence, when I'm trying to win someone over and convince someone to like me, it's really, it gets the best of me. So when I'm having people pay to come see me, I'm not nervous because they've already invested in me and they trust me. And so I feel like, oh, I'm just performing for friends. There's not a nervousness about it.
I feel that. What's your most favorite place to perform at and least favorite?
I wish I had a good answer to this, but honestly, my least favorite thing to perform at is a charity event where the person who booked me is a fan, but no one else is. Anytime I'm booked, it happens all the time, where like one person's in charge of booking the talent for like maybe their college. It could be just that, like that, or you know, their country club, and they're in charge of entertainment. And they're like, I've been a fan forever. I hear you on Howard Stern. They know me from something. Or they're like, I know your roasts. And they book me, and then I come and I do my stand-up, and it's nothing like my roast. And everyone's kind of just like offended and confused.
That's not the right audience, right?
Charity event. You want everyone to like kind of be on board with what they're seeing. And so I think the best crowds are like, I don't know. I really love performing in LA at the Comedy Store, Improv, and then New York Comedy Cellar, and you know, Laugh Factory. Just all the clubs where people go, comedy fans go to when they're in the coolest cities for comedy. Yeah.
Has there ever been any like super tough crowds that you remember where you couldn't get anyone?
I had one last night. Actually.
Oh, last night?
Yeah, I had two shows last night, and one of them I was just like, ugh.
In Vegas?
They were just, no. I was in LA last night, and it was It was just a bad vibe in the room, and I was kind of. I had just like taken a nap and woken up late and just gotten there and my vibe was off. I never blame them because it's something I'm doing wrong. So it was just a bad feeling where I was just like, well, that wasn't impressive. And I definitely left people going, she's supposed to be like good. Like, what was that? And I was trying out some new stuff, but I left really, that's kind of the fun thing about stand-up is like you can bomb like you did your first year, like still 20 years in and makes you question everything. So, but that, I needed that because sometimes you get too cocky and you're like, I don't really even need to try. And then all of a sudden I was like, whoa,
humbled you.
I got to try on this next one. So the next set, I just walked across, you know, it was at the Improv and it was the next room. It was the bigger room. And I had actually people there that had never seen me do stand up before, but that were like the executives for the CW. Mm-hmm. That is the, I do F-Boy Island and they air my show F-Boy Island. And so they had never seen me do stand up, I don't think. And I was a little nervous of like, oh God, I can't bomb in front of them. They're not gonna take my job away, but it would just be awkward because I have to talk to them afterwards. That's the worst. Okay, Sean, that's the worst is when you have to talk to someone after your set and you have a bad set. Or you just have like an okay set and they're like, that was amazing. And you just know it wasn't, but you can't say that because you have to be confident because confidence is attractive and you have to always appear like, that was great. So that was scary to walk into, but then I had a really good set because I think the one kicked my ass before and I was like, okay, pay attention. Like you think you can just like own this place and walk in and do whatever you want. No, you have to like try a little bit.
Yeah.
So it ended up being good. But if those would have been reversed, I'd be in like a sad mood right now.
That makes sense. Are there any comedians you really look up to? Like you study them and you really like what they do?
Honestly, yeah. I was having a little bit of a writer's block recently, or just having a moment of like, what am I even doing anymore? And I'm trying to develop new material for this next special and feeling stuck and I wanted to be inspired. And so I revisited Louis C.K.'s, like all of his albums. I actually went backwards, most recent, and then went backwards to like, you know, 2003 or something. I don't even know. It's really far. It was like 10 or 11 albums. And he's just the best to ever do it. And really someone that I had stayed away from for a couple of years, I guess, because of all the controversy. I was kind of just like, I don't know. That kind of bummed me out. And I was like, man, I thought I like really, I trusted that guy to like always tell the truth. And it doesn't seem like he was really telling us the truth. But then I went back and listened to his albums and I was like, He was telling us the truth. It was all there. He f***s off in front of people a lot throughout his albums.
Oh, yeah,
it's all over the place. And but not to say that I'm not saying what he did was okay or anything. I'm just saying it shouldn't have been such a shock to us that happened, because he is pretty damn authentic with who he is on stage, and he might not be that great of a guy, and he's kind of just saying it like it is up there, and he has told us that he's, we should not have expected him to be an upstanding citizen in that way.
Yeah.
And what I just, he's the best stand-up, I think.
Wow.
Going. And yeah, you're nodding. You get it. Like, there's no one else that's just so, he was the first guy, and now this is a thing you see all the time where people call their kids and complain about their kids and say, like, she's such a bitch, like, yeah, about their 3-year-old daughter. He was the first one to do that.
He pioneered it.
Yeah, where you go, oh my God, this guy just called his daughter an and she's 3. It was insane, but now it's like caught on, like, because everyone does think their daughter. Right. So there's a lot of things that he did pioneer, like you said, of just these thoughts that everyone's been struggling with and no one has been able to really articulate. And I think that really inspired me, because I think there's, although I'm so outspoken and there seems to be no filter on me, there are things that I'm deeply ashamed of about myself and the way my brain works that I still have not been able to make into jokes yet, because I'm so embarrassed of the way I think, or like, wow, I had that thought. And in listening to his album, I was like, I'm just going to start trying to put that stuff out there, even though it scares me to tell an audience that I've had this disturbing thought about wanting to hurt someone or wanting to hurt myself or whatever it is. And it worked. It really worked, like, immersing myself in his albums. And then also John Mulaney, I think, is just one of those people that is just one of the best comedy writers ever, and stand-ups in terms of just writing taking a joke and just sponging it out and getting every little morsel out of it, and not wasting a single line.
Yeah.
And there's no filler.
Yeah, he's like really zoned in on it, locked in basically.
Yeah, you can tell that guy gets off stage, is going to his notes and going, what did I do on right that time? And before a set, he's going over his notes. I mean, I've seen it kind of happen backstage before, and I've kind of noticed, oh, he's on his laptop when I'm over here, you know, eating skinny pop or something, you know, and just trying to.
You're vegan. I did some research.
Yeah, I am.
I want to ask on tour, though. That must be hard, like, nah, especially when you're in the.
No.
Really? In the South? Like, it's all
so
like.
So easy. Thai food. Do Thai food, there's always just veggies and tofu.
Okay.
Asian cuisine always has tofu.
Got it.
Nowhere else does. So they always have something. I really don't struggle with it that much. And then I think the bigger you get a rider, and you have like a list of things that you want backstage for you. Wow. But I always have like protein bars and stuff. Like, I'm not one of these vegans that puts people out by going like, we have to go to a vegan restaurant. Like, I usually don't actually suggest that to people who aren't vegan, because I don't want people to be grossed out by veganism or whatever. I don't want to shame people for not being it, although I do at times, because you know you're doing the wrong thing. There's no question. I mean, I get why you
morally,
do it.
Right?
I was not a vegan forever, but there's no question that harming animals that have the same intelligence as your cats and your dogs, your beloved cats and dogs, and we ruin people's lives if we find out they even hit a dog or kick a dog. Yet there's pigs and cows who are either equally as intelligent as your dog or more intelligent, and we are putting them through a life of suffering. They don't see 1 second from when they're born to when they're, even when they're conceived, they're in stress. Their mom is in stress because she's locked in a thing and someone's, you know, raping her with a test tube or however they're bred.
Yeah.
And then they're born. There's not a moment where they go, mama, mama. They're stolen right away as little infants going, where am I going? Their whole lives are filled with fear and just terror from the second they wake up, and then they become numb to it, and then they're just robots because they're being tortured and they have to just disassociate, and then they're murdered. So murder is the best part of their life. When someone's like, I'm sorry I'm eating this steak, I'm always like, don't be. I'm so happy for that cow that it's out of its horrible life that it had before it was. The bullet going through that cow's head was the pinnacle of its existence, that its suffering was over.
They shoot them?
Oh yeah, they shoot them.
Oh wow.
Yeah. What do you think they did?
I don't know. Like, I thought they cut their neck or something.
Oh yeah, maybe they do that too, which doesn't sound any better. I would rather be shot than have my neck
good point.
sliced.
I didn't know they were smart as dogs though. That's gonna make me think a little more, I'm not gonna lie.
They're dogs are kind of stupid. They're really intelligent.
My dog's pretty smart.
I'm sure it is, but I'm just saying they are capable of, and even if they're not, like, why do we don't, if a human's less intelligent than another human, we don't like treat them worse.
That's true.
So why are we even, just because something's stupider doesn't mean it doesn't want love and comfort. And I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad about what you're doing, because I'm not a perfect vegan. There are times where I've done like a weed gummy and I know it has animal bones in it or whatever. And I go, well, I'll make the exception. Or, you know, I step on a bug and I'm like, you know, you can't be perfect. But all I ask is that you just acknowledge the pain that this animal that you're eating, and going, I don't like this chicken. Ew. Like, just acknowledge that that was a bird that like wanted to live.
Fair.
And it doesn't mean you're a bad person or going to hell. Just if you just think about it a little bit.
Fair.
You know,
I'll
like
agree with that.
Chickens I stopped eating because I was like, oh, I had parakeets growing up. And if someone would have ever done this to my parakeet, I would have killed them. Yet it's okay to do to chickens. It doesn't make sense. So that's what made me a vegan. I miss eating meat. I miss eating cheese, all the things. I just can't do it because I just think about those animals. But if you are not vegan, it doesn't mean you're a bad person. I think you're probably just in denial, because if you think about it too much, you wouldn't be. If you saw the footage, if you saw what's happening to them, you wouldn't be able to do it, because no one would. It's a psychopathic thing to be able to do. But we disassociate. We put up the blinders, and you have to, because it tastes so good.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
I want to talk about F-Boy Island.
Yeah, please.
That is one of the funniest concepts I've heard for a show. How did you get involved with that?
Exactly the way that you're describing it. Like, I saw the name of the show and the concept of it, like, just in a paragraph.
Yeah.
It was in an email with a bunch of other shows that my agents were sending to me, being like, hey, they're looking for hosts for these shows. And I had told my reps, like, hey, can I stop, like, going out for acting roles and things? Because, I don't know, I'm not getting them. I'm not good at – I like being myself.
Right.
This isn't work. Like, I'm a comedian. Like, I've made my whole career has just been being myself. Why am I trying to act? It's something I can do, but it's not as interesting to me. And then I realized all the shows I watch are reality shows. Like, I like scripted stuff, but I'm mainly a reality show gal. Like, that's the entertainment I'm consuming. So why am I going out for things I wouldn't even watch?
Right.
So I just told them, if there's a way for me to get into the reality space, either being on a reality show or, you know, hosting one, let's do it. So then they sent me all these things, and I saw F-Boy Island, and I was like, what is that? Because it's funny. Already it's funny to name a show that. And then they wanted me. It was the first time in my career that – or even in my, like, romantic life, that something has wanted me as much as I want it.
Okay.
It's never happened that way. You know, romantically, when you're pursuing someone, there's always someone that wants someone more.
One-sided.
It was the first time. So the show was originally on HBO Max. Now it's on the CW. But when HBO had it, HBO wanted me just as much as I wanted them to host. And there was a lot of people up for it, but they were like, I think she can do the best job at that. And they let me be myself. And
so no script? You're just saying what's on your mind?
I mean, there was a script, but I got to write it.
Oh, okay.
So that was the nicest thing. Nice. It's just you go in. It's so easy. Like, my career is easy. I get to go on stage. I don't have to memorize lines. There's definitely things that are difficult about it. But F-Boy Island, I just got to watch a reality show happen in front of me, which is already what I would want. I'd watch the show if I wasn't on it.
Yeah.
And then in real time, I get to watch it and watch and see if it's actually, is this fake or is it real? It actually is real.
Like,
people really do fall in love. And then I got to just comment on it and make fun of it. And that was that's what makes F-Boy Island different.
Yeah.
Is that there are people on this are the two things that make this show different than any other reality dating show. First of all, I'm making fun of everything the whole time. Like, I'm saying to them, like, we really hope you find true love on the show. And by reality dating show standards, that's about 2 months after this airs.
Right.
You'll break up. That's true love on the, you know, like, we acknowledge this thing isn't going to last.
Mm-hmm.
We hope it does, but, like, let's, the writing on the wall.
Has anyone lasted?
No one's on a reality show to find love.
Right.
Who? That's the worst way to find love ever. They don't last. But I also say that, yes, no one's lasted yet.
Okay.
But what? Most people who are hot 20-somethings, those relationships don't last, like, even on the outside world.
Right.
So I think about our success rate has been about the same as
The Bachelor.
It's just like anyone's life. You know, like, most people you date, it doesn't work out. But people do fall in love. And, yeah, The Bachelor has had many more years to be on and prove itself. But our show, people do fall in love. I mean, it's happens in, you know, 10 weeks. And all you're doing is talking about the person the whole time. You have no phone. You have no job. You're staying at a resort. And all you're doing is dating.
Wow.
And all you're doing when you're not dating is talking to producers about the people you are dating. So can you imagine how, like, anyone would fall in love?
Yeah.
You just, it would happen to anyone. People go, I would never do that on a reality show. I would never fall in love like that. You really would. It's almost like we've got it down to a science.
Yeah.
And it's like I compare it to zoos, where people go, I don't watch reality shows because they're fake. And I'm like, do you go to zoos and go, this is fake? It's like, these are real animals and these are real relationships. But yeah, the pandas are having sex because we put the pandas in a habitat together.
Right.
So would they have found each other on the outside world? Maybe not. But we've put them in captivity and they're mating on their own. We're not forcing them to.
Yeah.
So that it's just we're putting them into habitats that are conducive to mating.
That makes sense,
and
yeah.
And then the other thing on our show that's different is that there are shows where there are guys who are pieces of and they come on with, you know, less than good intentions. You know, they're not really there for the woman. And we all know that. But they don't say it. On our show, they'll say it. And they'll go, I'm not here for her. I'm here for the money. They'll tell us, but they won't tell the girl. So as you're watching the show, you know which guys are pieces of that are there lying. And then you watch them go on these dates and, like, lie in real time. And it blows your mind. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Wait, so how do they win the money?
So if they trick the girl into thinking that they're a nice guy. So they're F-boys and they're nice guys. Yeah. And they're a big batch of 24 guys. And there are three girls looking for love. And they date all these guys. And half the guys have declared, I'm an F-boy, and I'm here for the money. I don't care about love at all. Some of them change their mind because they do fall in love with these girls. And they go, actually, I think I was scared of intimacy. And I was an F-boy because I never trusted love. And now I finally trust. And they turn things around. But the goal is the girls want to pick a guy who is going to choose them over the money. If they choose a nice guy, they split the money evenly. Mm. If a nice guy comes in and then they choose him, they split the money. There's 100 grand on the line at the end. They choose an F-boy. They know it's an F-boy by that time. It's been, like, revealed. Sometimes it isn't, but sometimes it is. They'll choose an F-boy just hoping that he has changed his mind. Because every F-boy that says, I'm an F-boy, and gets caught by the girls of being an F-boy, says, but I've changed. I came in here not expecting to meet you.
Right.
And the girl wants to believe it so much, as we all do in normal life, where we know this guy is a scoundrel, and we probably even got with him because he was cheating on his girlfriend. But he's not going to do that to me. He's changed. We want to trust that guy. So then all the money, if I'm a girl on the show and I choose an F-boy, all the money then goes to him, 100 grand, and he can choose to split it with me or he can take it all for himself.
Wow.
And that's on the final episode.
That's
funny. Guys straight up take all the money. And these girls put all their trust in them and walk away 50 grand with, they've given up this 10 weeks of their lives and they walk away with nothing.
Ooh.
Because they've trusted this guy who has lied so well.
Wow.
And I play the game too. I don't know who is who. And so my heart gets broken too when at the end of this, where I've been like, Garrett, you lot, like,
oh, you have no idea?
No idea. I wanted to stay out of it because I don't want to be up there pretending to be like, oh, Katie, are you sure you want to pick him? Like, I don't want to know because I don't trust myself to not give it away because I want these girls to pick the right guy.
Right.
So I wanted to be just as invested in it too.
That's
and play
cool.
the game. And it's kind of fun.
I like that. I'm going to check it out. That's super
cool. It's awesome. It's on the CW on Mondays. It starts October 16th. It's one of those shows that, you know, a lot of guys come up to me and say, I've never liked a dating reality show, but this one's awesome. Because everything that you want to make fun of about it, I'm making fun of. I'm calling it all out. I'm calling these guys d-. I'm making fun of what they're wearing. I'm making fun of how they dress. I'm making fun of what they say, how they talk.
Yeah.
And so there's someone representing you watching at home being like, this is such d-. And
so
I'm like,
cool.
I go, this is d-. You know, so It's really nice.
No, a lot of those shows are all the same and it's all like basic commentary. So that's super cool.
And the people making the show have made the Bachelor shows. So
it
was fun to, the creators of the show were like, I'm tired of working in this genre. Let's make fun of this thing that I've had to like pretend is real for so long. So it's a comedy show, but it actually, people do fall in love too.
That's
so you
cool.
get both things.
That's awesome. Nikki, it's been fun. Where can people find out more about what you're doing?
NikkiGlaser.com. You can check out my tour. I'm on the Good Girl Tour right now, all over the country doing theaters. It is so much fun. Come out if you can handle it. And then you can check out my podcast. I have a podcast called the Nikki Glaser Podcast on with iHeartRadio, and it's 2 times a week, every week out of my home.
Let's go. Thanks for watching, guys. First comedian on the show.
We did
Peace.
It.